Hi, everybody. Welcome to Steelers.com Live at 4. I'm Missy Matthews, joined today by Bob Labriola of Steelers Digest and Steelers.com and Mike Prasuta of the DVE Morning Show and Steelers.com. Hello, gentlemen. It's good to be back.
Yes, it is. Missy, we've been on hiatus for a little bit, but it is good to be back.
Feels like a long time. Feels great to be back.
Well, the good news is each and every Thursday during the offseason, we will be joining you guys at 4. Next week, we'll kind of start getting Twitter questions involved. So, as always, use hashtag live at 4 for that. But today, we actually have some exciting Steelers news to get to. Guys, I think everyone's kind of been waiting for this to happen. A new O-line coach for the Steelers, and it was announced this morning that the Steelers are bringing in Mike Munchak, who was recently with the Tennessee Titans and Houston Oilers pretty much for his entire career. 33 years he'll be in the league this season, and seems to be this is a choice that fans like, guys, coaches around the league, players, just everyone's happy with this fit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that it could have been possibly a better scenario than this, Missy. When you look at who was out there, Mike Munchak's credentials as a Hall of Fame player, as a longtime offensive line coach, as a head coach. I mean, this is a guy who you would consider to be at the top or very near the top of all the available candidates for an offensive line job, And because he's still under contract to the Tennessee Titans, he wasn't really needing a job this year. I mean, he's due to make, I believe, the last year on his Titans contract is $3 million. So, Mike Munchak could have just decided to sit out the year, collected his money from the Titans, but the fact that he was interested and wanted to come to the Steelers to coach this particular group of offensive linemen, a group of younger guys, I think really they can really benefit from what he knows about football and about what he knows about being a professional.
Yeah, I think he's a great addition. Let's look beyond the mere offensive line aspect of it. He's got a great reputation. He's a man of great character, according to everyone who knows him, or at least everyone that I've heard talk about him. He's highly regarded. He's a Pennsylvania guy, which doesn't hurt. And he has the type of credentials and the type of resume that I think will command respect and attention right off the bat, even though he's coming to a new team.
Yeah, and the other thing about him that I kind of like is that, there are some offensive line coaches who inject a little bit of the nasty into it. That's the way Mike Munchak played. He was a physical guy, a get-after-them kind of guy, and I think that he's going to instill that in these young players. I mean, again, I think the Steelers are giving him a lot of, so to speak, unmolded clay, a lot of young guys that I think he's going to be able to mold, and if they're willing to pay attention and listen and heed what he teaches, I think that this unit could become, I don't know, dare I say, a weapon?
A strength?
A strength?
Something the Steelers can count on every week?
Let's hope.
All right, well, let's take a look at what Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin had to say about this hiring. He said, quote, "I'm excited that Mike will be joining our staff at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mike's offensive line background speaks for itself, both as a Hall of Fame player for the Houston Oilers and as a very successful coach with the Tennessee Titans. I look forward to having him join our coaching staff as we have already started preparing for the 2014 season."
Two Hall of Fame coaches now on Mike Tomlin's staff.
And three former head coaches as assistants. That can't hurt. I thought Mike Munchak would have been a great fit for Penn State, Labs.
Yeah.
Being a product of Penn State and Penn State.
Understanding that whole atmosphere up there, the climate.
So if the guy can be a head coach in the Big Ten, and I think he could have been.
He's made for the NFL.
I think he could be an O-line coach in the NFL. No, I'm not trying to be funny. That's a pretty all-encompassing gig with high visibility and high responsibility. Now, Penn State didn't think that, so maybe it's just me.
Good for the Steelers.
Yeah, I like the hire a lot.
All right, well, let's go now around the AFC North, kind of taking a look at the latest news and happenings. And we will start with the Browns because they, of course, still have not filled their head coaching position. Guys, here is the laundry list of guys that they have brought in that we have been known about. And before we came down for the show, I saw Jason Pinkston, formerly a Pitt Panther, tweeted, who's with the Cleveland Browns now, like, "Let's get this over with. Let's get back to work. This search needs to end sometimes." But, Labs, there does seem to be a front runner and could possibly close a deal at some point with Mike Pettine.
Yeah, Mike Pettine looks like he's going to get the job. the Browns, as we speak to you now, were in the process, reportedly, of negotiating his contract. So, excuse me, it looks like Mike Pettine will be the, I don't know, the 30th head coach of the Browns since they returned to the NFL in 1999. And, you know, I kind of thought it was a little bit ironic, Mike, that on the day that the Browns ended their season, which was December the 29th in Pittsburgh, here they were firing a coach after only one season in the NFL city where the team has had three coaches since 1969. Quite the contrast there in terms of the philosophy, you know, of the two organizations. And, you know, until the Browns get this figured out, I don't think they really have any chance to compete. I don't know if Mike Pettine is the right guy or not. All I know for sure is he's the next guy.
He certainly wasn't the first guy. And that's really what I have a problem, or should I say what my eyebrows go up about when I think about this Cleveland Browns situation. What happened to Rob Chudzinski is atypical. But, hey, if you decide after 1 year you're done with the guy, then you're done with the guy. And you don't keep him around to make it more socially acceptable when you fire him. But presumably there would be a plan in place to replace him, and it doesn't look like that's been the case. It's kind of like, well, let's fire this guy, and then we'll grope around for a while and see what we come up with. And I think that's been going on in Cleveland a long time, which is why we're looking at yet another head coach, and there's going to be another – starting quarterback next year, if not at the start of the year, then soon thereafter. A lot of buzz about the Browns drafting the latest savior. What did that start with? Tim Couch in 1999?
Yes, yes.
Been a few guys come through there since then. This continues to be a team that just seems to lack direction. It lacks a rudder, and the results are what you get when you lack direction.
And the guy we're watching here on the highlights, Jason Campbell, it reportedly is due to be cut because of the fact he played, I think, 40 or 45% of the offensive snaps. He triggered escalators in his contract that are going to make him put him in a salary stratosphere that is a little too high for a guy who was 1-7 as a starter. So, you know, the Browns are, you know, not only going to change quarterbacks, but maybe not even keep the guys who did the bulk of the playing this past season. So, you know, again, we'll see how it all works out for them.
All right, let's move on to the Baltimore Ravens. We know with Jim Caldwell departing to go to the Detroit Lions, they are looking for a new offensive coordinator. And Steelers running backs coach Kirby Wilson was one of those guys who did interview with John Harbaugh during this week, Labs. And there was a few other guys out there. But what do you think this team really needs in terms of getting their offense going?
You know, I don't really know what they need. But the four guys that the four finalists supposedly are Kyle Shanahan, Scott Linehan, their own wide receivers coach Jim Hostler, and Kirby Wilson. You know, the Ravens also have a new offensive line coach. Juan Castillo was given that job by John Harbaugh. The Ravens had some offensive line problems. You know, we always talk about the Steelers' offensive line problems. The Ravens had some of those on their own, and they are also facing a situation where Michael Orr and Eugene Monroe, the two guys who started at tackle for them towards the end of the season, both of them can become unrestricted free agents. You have a situation where the Ravens' running game, Ray Rice, Bernard Pierce, was not what they kind of thought it would be or needed it to be. And the other thing with the Ravens is that the loss of Anquan Boldin, I think, was something that maybe they underestimated a little bit because, you know, Joe Flacco often was back there looking like he didn't have that security blanket kind of receiver that they had last year for him during that run to the Super Bowl. So I think the Ravens offense is in a situation where they may need a lot of different things. And, you know, Ozzie Newsome also has been quoted as talking about a salary cap situation that is bad enough that they are considering getting rid of Terrell Suggs. So, I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's going to be a quiet offseason in Baltimore this year.
Yeah, I'll stick with my theme of direction. I think the Ravens, particularly on offense, lost their direction lost our identity for how many years, Labs, did we get ready for these Steelers-Ravens games and immediately start talking about Ray Rice? Got to stop Ray Rice running. Got to stop Ray Rice out of the backfield. Can't let Ray Rice beat you for a buck 40 or a buck 50 combined yards. And Ray Rice doesn't do that to people anymore. They won the Super Bowl last year, the Ravens did, and as a result, Joe Flacco got franchise quarterback money, which he was apparently willing to accept. But the tag of you got to win the game for us when we need you to because you're the franchise quarterback, he seemed a little less enthusiastic about picking up on that. So whoever winds up with the job down there, you got to figure out who's going to be the guy. The offense is going to run through blank. As the complement or the counter, it's going to be this. They got to figure out not just where they want to go, but how they want to get there. And that's something that Baltimore never really had a problem with, at least it hasn't for a long, long time. And now all of a sudden, anything's possible. So I guess in one way, it's a chance to go in and really put a stamp on a team. But you also have to have the right type of ingredients to make that stamp a good one.
All right, let's move on to the Cincinnati Bengals. They lost both of their coordinators but have hired from within. Labs, is this something that surprises you that they stayed in-house?
Not at all. I mean, this is something to me that's kind of typical Bengals. And, you know, we'll see. You know, if it works out based on the people that they have. But, you know, the Bengals have never been the kind of team to, you know, go on that worldwide search and dig out the hot candidates and, you know, all of that kind of thing. I mean, you know, Marvin Lewis lost Jay Gruden. He lost Mike Zimmer. Both of them got head coaching jobs, and they just kind of promoted from within. Paul Gunther becomes the defensive coordinator. He was the linebackers coach there. Hugh Jackson, who had a previous tenure with the Bengals before leaving there to accept a head coaching position with the Raiders, which we all know how those things work out.
You end up being offensive coordinator for the Bengals.
Well, but then Hugh Jackson came back. He was a running backs coach last year, special consultant or whatever title they threw on top of it. But now he is in place, and he will become the offensive coordinator. You know, the one of those two, Mike, that I would think might hurt the Bengals the most is Mike Zimmer.
I think he's the bigger loss, although with Marvin Lewis and his defensive background, that's probably where you could afford to sustain a loss if you have to take one. I'm gonna hit direction one more time with the Bengals because this is a team that goes to the playoffs and looks very good in the regular season, then gets to the playoffs and nothing. So what do? Do you blow it up and start over, or do you kind of bite the bullet, swallow hard, and say, hey, head coaches are hard to find, good ones, good quarterbacks are hard to find. Let's try to keep working with what we have and do it a little bit better. And maybe some different voices, at least in some different spots, might be what Andy Dalton needs to find a way to bridge his regular season success to his postseason failure. And maybe that's enough to get that team to turn the corner.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to, you know, what I kind of call the Bengals way there with, you know, you mentioned blow it up or do you kind of stay with what you have and try to make it better? That's the way I think the Bengals operate. They try and stay with what they have and try and make it better. I would be shocked if the Bengals would pull the plug on Andy Dalton and, you know, use a first-round pick on a quarterback, you know, something like that. That, to me, is not the way they usually operate. And so I would expect that the Bengals are going to look at their team and think, you know, we get Geno Atkins back, we get Leon Hall back. Our defense is going to be more than what it was at the end of the season. You know, you still have A.J. Green. You know, you try and do some things that way. But
yeah, and you have a lot of players there, key guys that are third year, second year, first year. So maybe it's a team still in development, still in transition. I know there's frustration over what happened, particularly this year in the postseason. The Bengals didn't go on the road this time.
Mm-hmm.
They played
right.
at
made
home
it even
and,
worse
and,
a little
and
bit.
Didn't get it done. But sometimes you got to, what that guy in Houston used to say, keep knocking on the door till you kick it down.
Yeah, well, he was never able to do that either.
Well, you're right, he wasn't.
But you do want to maybe try and keep doing it that way.
It's the thought that counts.
It's the thought.
All right, well, before you guys kick the door down, we're going to take a short break. When we get back, we'll tell you which team Antonio Brown is playing on in the Pro Bowl on Sunday and also talk all things Super Bowl.
You love cruises and you love your Steelers. Now you can do them together. Hi, I'm Tutch Hilk, and join me along with past and present Pittsburgh Steelers for the first ever Steelers cruise. Steelers fans will board the Royal Caribbean cruise ship Brilliance of the Seas and enjoy sailgate parties, beach barbecues, daily autograph sessions, cool kids activities, and so much more. Plus, Heinz Ward has something pretty special planned. Visit SteelersCruise.com or call 412-381-5553 to reserve your spot on the 2014 Steelers Bahamas Cruise.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Talking about the AFC Championship game this past Sunday, we know that Denver will be going to the Super Bowl. It will be their first trip since 1998. And I have to say, this wasn't the most exciting game. I was kind of more excited watching the NFC game.
I don't know. This game really kind of amused the heck out of me. I mean, you know, we got a chance to see, Bill Belichick coach like a human being instead of the deity that he was kind of being made out to be in the weeks and days leading up to the AFC Championship game. I'm just going to throw out this little group of statistics here to support my case. Bill Belichick, of course, made his bones, so to speak, as a defensive mind, as a guy who was Bill Parcells, defensive ace when they were both with the Giants. Peyton Manning attempted 43 passes. No sacks for the Patriots, no pressures for the Patriots, no interceptions for the Patriots, one pass defensed, and that was not by a defensive back. Clearly, the New England defensive game plan didn't work, was unsuccessful, and you know it kind of was somewhat amusing to me that after the game, Bill Belichick kind of, I won't say it's not right after the game, but in the immediate aftermath of it, kind of directed the conversation to Wes Welker's hit on Aqib Talib, which the league quickly rubber stamped as legal, instead of talking about how he never tried to get any pressure on Peyton Manning throughout that game.
Yeah, I think Wes Welker actually learned that in New England, what he did for the Denver Broncos. But that guy right there is the one that got my attention throughout this game. Tom Brady was pretty un-Brady-like, and I'm not trying to pin the whole thing on him. It's never always about the quarterback. Andy Dalton took a little too much guff. He didn't play well in the playoffs, but neither did those people around him. But Tom Brady has been something of a deity in the NFL himself, low these many years, and you just don't see him making the overthrows and the misplays.
Yeah, right.
I know he didn't have Rob Gronkowski, and the weapons were down, and he didn't run the ball, but that was about as average or human as I've ever seen Tom Brady look in a big game, and that explains to me in great detail why New England's not playing any more games.
All right, let's move on to the NFC Championship. We know what happened at the end, and I promise we will get to Richard Sherman in just a bit. This was kind of one of those games where, okay, you thought, all right, we don't need to watch anymore, and then at the end it did get really exciting, guys.
Yeah, it did, and, you know, again, I'm going to pull my one meaningful statistic out of this. In their final four possessions of the game, the San Francisco 49ers offense, punt, fumble, interception, interception. Three turnovers in the fourth quarter, all of them by the quarterback, who looks really good doing this and is truly a weapon doing that. But, you know, what Seattle's defense was able to do was towards the end was force Colin Kaepernick to play the position in a more traditional way. And, you know, that the Seahawks defense, in my mind, is the best in the league. And that kind of set it up for the outcome that we saw.
I was amazed that Seattle was able to run that play. I first saw this last season where the ball is thrown and the defense ends up with the ball. Last season it was called a touchdown for the Seahawks and they won a game. This season, same thing. The defense ended up with the ball and it was awarded to the Seahawks on the 1 yard line. I think that's a great play, Labs. I don't understand why more teams, you know, you hear about turnovers and how you got to protect the ball. The Seahawks seem to be able to give it away and profit by it. Can you explain that to me?
No, I cannot. I mean, and of course you're talking about officiating. Which to me is, I mean, that is a drum we can beat every week in every game. I mean, you know, it used to be that you would look at a team that would occasionally get the raw end of the deal in the officiating, and maybe you feel sorry for them or maybe you laugh about it if you're kind of one of those schadenfreude kind of people. But it's so commonplace now that it happens every game. It happens to a lot of times both teams in the game. I mean, I don't want to say that I've become totally desensitized to it, but I've come to accept the incompetence of NFL officiating. And so when that happened, it didn't shock me. It didn't.
There it is right there. Look, right. Look, he's got the ball. He's got the ball. He's laying on the ground. They all jump on him. Seattle ball. What?
Beep.
Did we not all see that? It's really clear as day. How you could not see DeMar Bowman
there's
with
seven,
the ball tucked in his arm firmly down by contact.
There were seven guys who didn't see it. That I can be certain of.
All right, well, one thing we did see, and I'm pretty sure anybody across the country who was watching the post-game show saw, was Richard Sherman's post-game interview, so let's take a listen.
The final play, take me through it.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Who was talking about you?
Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best. Or I'm going to shut it for you real quick. L.O.B.
This is what you get, networks, when you stick a microphone in a guy's face immediately after the game. That's what you get. I mean, I don't have, you know, the only problem I have with Richard Sherman was what he did to draw the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty that moved the ball back half the distance from the 20 after the interception to the 10. You know, the things that he said after the game to me, you know, are heat of the moment, you know, competing. It was the biggest play of his career and the biggest game of his career. They're going to the Super Bowl. Somebody sticks a microphone in your face. And, hey, he went off. And there was no profanity used, even though it was live television. So he had some sense about his rant in that respect. But all this criticism of Richard Sherman, I don't get it. He can play on my team anytime.
He can play on my team as well, but I'm not going to let him do any interviews. And here's why. When they stick the microphone in the guy's face, what they want there is the raw emotion of going to the Super Bowl, the joy, the euphoria. What they got instead was, I'm the best, me. How dare they throw the ball at me? Don't they know how great I am? Let's look at that play for a second. Number one, there was pressure, which affected Colin Kaepernick. Number two, he didn't intercept the ball. He just deflected it. And number three, the linebacker hustling over to help out and support ultimately finished the play. It wasn't all about Richard Sherman. He just made it out that way. He could play for my team too, but he has to sit in the classless jerk part of the room.
Well, like I said, though, that's what if you go wait the 10 minutes that you're supposed to wait and then go in the locker room and ask him that, he doesn't say it like that. But that whole the whole TV network thing that they have to have that walking off the field with the coach or the sideline thing. Hey, you want microphones down there? That's what you get. And don't complain about it when you get it, because it is a raw, passionate, violent sport that is being played by men who are sometimes raw and violent and passionate themselves. And I just think it amuses me that when someone responds like this, we're shocked and surprised. Oh no, he wasn't the calm, cool, detached. Let's what they want. Okay, I'm going to talk about what a wonderful experience it is going to the Super Bowl. That wasn't in his head at that time. And I don't know that you could expect.
No, me was in his head, but I bet it's there a lot.
What?
Me in his head.
Hey, but when you're playing one-on-one against a receiver, it is me. Because if you don't make the play, everybody's going you.
If his linebacker doesn't come over, it's second down, and they maybe throw it at him again.
Go ahead. Good luck with that.
All right. Well, we know who will be facing off in the Super Bowl at MetLife Stadium. As beautiful as it is here in Pittsburgh with all the snow, New York and New Jersey getting hit just as hard, guys. Kind of take a look. They had a media op on Wednesday at MetLife Stadium. Just tons of snow everywhere. They had to clean the inside. They're trying to put up stages and banners, and it's kind of just not working now. I know it's still a week or so away. There's time, but what are you going to do if that's what's happening on Super Bowl Sunday?
Let it snow. Let it snow. Let it snow. You think back to this season, what were two of the most fun games the Steelers played this year? Miami and Green Bay. Why? They were in the snow. What's one of the most iconic moments in recent Steeler history? I'll tell you, Jerome Bettis running through Brian Urlacher into the end zone in the snow. Football's played outdoors most of the time. The elements are supposed to be part of it. Why not in the Super Bowl? If we can have an AFC Championship game between the Steelers and the Patriots at Heinz Field when it feels like it's minus 50 degrees, we can have a Super Bowl in the snow.
You know why you can't? Because all those big shots who are going to that game are not interested in paying all that money to sit in that climate. And Roger Goodell, I mean, if it's 14 degrees, you know, and this cracks me up too. They're saying, well, Sunday, February 2nd, the high is going to be in the low 30s. That's not at 6:30 when the kickoff happens.
Not usually.
The sun is already down yeah. by then. That high was about 4 hours earlier. So I just think that
good tailgate
the Super Bowl is much more than a sporting event now. It's an event. Yeah. It's an event. And a lot of these, it's a corporate kind of thing, like it or not, that's what it is. And I just don't think a lot of the big shots are going to like sitting there, you know, stamping their feet, trying to keep them warm through a 26-minute halftime show.
Well, hey, not being one of those big shots, being somebody, Mr. Middle America,
couch.
Joe Average, I'll be watching it from the man cave.
What's the temperature in the man cave?
About 68.
Yeah, there you go.
I like it a little cool.
Variable cloudy. 68.
No chance of precipitation.
All right, well, before we end, let's talk about Antonio Brown playing in the Pro Bowl on Sunday. I'm not even going to ask if you guys watched the draft because I'm sure you did not, but he was picked for Team Sanders, so I'm sure Steelers Nation will be cheering him on Sunday. Did you guys watch? Did you hear about it?
I heard about it, and let me say this. I was hoping that they would do a real schoolyard pick'em. I mean, it was a two-day thing where they picked linemen the first day and then everybody else the next day because, you know.
Well, they picked running backs the first day, too.
Okay, but they picked certain positions as opposed to no, you have nobody on your team and now let's pick from scratch because – you know, what if, like, Dion or Jerry Rice or someone picked all the quarterbacks? Now, you have none. How are you going to play? You think you can win with no quarterbacks? I mean, that kind of thing was removed from it. I mean, I just thought it could have been really interesting if it was strict schoolyard pick 'em because you could do some things to the other guy, you know, pick all the offensive tackles.
I'll tell you, if it was that way, what I would have done is pick every offensive player and no defensive players whatsoever because I don't know if people still watch the Pro Bowl or not. It tends to score in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. They tend not to even breathe on each other. So no offense, J.J. Watt. I don't need you. I'll put my running back out there to stand there and not hit anybody, and I'll get the ball back on offense, and I'll score.
Not a bad plan. That's why I said pick all the quarterbacks.
Yep, same thing, same theory.
All right, well, that is going to do it for us here today on Steelers.com Live at 4. Thanks for joining us. For Bob and Mike, I'm Missy. We'll see you next Thursday at 4 o'clock.
Bowman still has the ball.